everybody to be encouraged to encourage other people to come. There are still some people out there who don't believe that our meetings are open, but they are. So please be sure to let people know, if they're wondering about that, that our meetings are open. We decided at one of our recent meetings to announce at the beginning of all of our meetings that the public comment, although there is a portion of the meeting set aside for that, is also at the discretion of the chairman, possible at any time during the meeting. And so if there are comments that people want to make, that is a possibility, and usually what determines whether or not we take those is time and those kinds of constraints. We don't ever use that particular thing as a way of not having people have a chance to get their views known. There have been a few times, too, when people are here for only a portion of the meeting because of other commitments, and the time that the public comment period is set is not appropriate or possible for them to use. So we do try to make exceptions in that way, too. The way for that to happen is to let me know if there is some, you know, if someone is here who wants to make a comment and the time thing isn't going to work out for them to be here for the whole meeting, if they can let me know directly, that's the best way to deal with that.
Barbara, I have a question.
Okay.
If someone comes in at any point during the day, do you want, I mean, if they introduce themselves, fine, but if they just come in and sit down, do you want me to ask them to introduce themselves?
Yes, please.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, now we have in the past while been making sure that the minutes are available on the web and in other formats for people. The Newsline Channel 2 carries them, and we're trying to make sure that they do get out there for people to look at. We also make sure that people know that they are a draft until the meeting happens, the next meeting happens. This time we have two sets of minutes, one from the July 28th meeting, which was an in-person meeting, and the other from the August 23rd telephone conference meeting. Are there any corrections or additions to either of those sets of minutes?
If not, so I move their acceptance.
Second.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded that the July 28th in-person meeting minutes and the August 23rd telephone conference meeting minutes be approved. Is there any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. It has been done. Okay, one of the things that we have been privileged to be doing at these meetings is to be presented with overviews of different portions of the Commission's operation. These have been very helpful in making us aware of what the Commission is doing, but also in making determinations about policies and things like that that are part of what we are charged with doing. And today we are going to be hearing about technology, and we're going to hear about that from the Commission's Employee of the Year, Jonathan Ross. And I'm very happy to introduce Jonathan. I have observed his teaching of people and know about the kinds of things that he does to keep the technology situation going. And, you know, he's not only knowledgeable in what he does, but good at explaining it. And that's a combination that oftentimes is hard to find. So without any further ado, it's all yours, Jonathan.
Okay.
Welcome.
Thank you. I don't have a great deal to say, other than I guess I want to just kind of talk a little bit about sort of what we do in the area of technology and what sorts of services we have available and things. And then from there, take whatever questions you guys have, I guess. Our technology services are delivered by a variety of people within the agency. But the primary persons involved would be our two program specialists and myself being the program manager for our technology services. And what that ends up equaling is one technology specialist in each district. So we have myself out of the Omaha office, which encompasses the Omaha district. Nancy Kaufman, who is our program specialist in the Lincoln office, covering the Lincoln district. And then Jan Brandt, who covers the most territory of the three of us, out in the North Platte district. She's actually, her office is actually in the Kearney office. In addition, though, to those three people that I mentioned, myself included, there are numerous other staff throughout NCBVI that can and do provide technology training. And probably the most notable one in that group would be the technology instructor in the orientation center. That individual would have a great deal of contact time with people who are currently attending the center to provide them with technology training. And then in addition to that, many of the rehab counselors and orientation counselors out in the field are also equipped to provide instruction and do quite a bit of that when they're working with individuals. As far as the services that we provide, as far as technology goes, really it kind of runs the spectrum depending on the individual's need. Frequently we're called upon, and when I say we're talking, I guess primarily about the two program specialists and myself, to maybe do an initial assessment of an individual's skills and what sorts of needs they have in terms of technology, whether it be they're going to need a note taker or a scanning program for use on the job or at home, or whether it's going to be taking a look at a potential employment situation to see what sorts of accommodations can be made. The training that we provide is highly individualized. It really depends on what the person is needing. Pretty much every person I've ever worked with is sort of on a different level, different little pace in terms of how they learn and what sorts of skills they're needing to acquire. So we don't generally have a certain mold that we try to fit people into. We sort of fit our program to meet their needs. The training takes place in a variety of settings, either in their home or sometimes in our offices if they don't have equipment available at home, or sometimes right on the job site, depending on where we're at in the process of the employment situation. Also, like I mentioned, for people who are attending the orientation center, they do receive training in the area of computer technology as a part of that program as well. People always ask me, or when I guess try and tell people what it is that I do, my job is has a number of different areas, but primarily my responsibility is to be a resource to clients and employers in determining what sorts of accommodations will meet their need for either their independent living goals or their vocational objectives. And what that really comes down to is meeting with individuals to find out what their needs are, meeting with employers to find out what those needs are, and that would include current employers for persons who are experiencing a new vision loss and are needing to find alternatives to maintain their employment or retain their employment. It may include potential employers where somebody is interested in applying at a particular place of employment. A lot of times I'll be one of the first contacts for that employer, and I'll meet with their, it kind of depends on the situation, but usually meet with somebody in maybe their human resources department that will put me in touch with somebody in the actual department that they're looking at. And usually, most employers are actually pretty open to having me come in and take a look at their system and kind of give them some advice. And on that contact, it's usually more of a consultation type of appointment. I'm not really going in and telling them this is what you need to do, but I'm going in and saying, if you were to consider hiring somebody that's blind, these are some things that you could do that would make this job accessible. And then from there, of course, we will make recommendations if needed as far as what specifically they should buy. The thing that we always run into, though, of course, is that employers are not equipped to really get all of this in place. So it takes more than just a recommendation. And so in addition to a recommendation, and I guess now I'm actually talking about what I do as well as what Nancy Kaufman and Jan Brandt do as well. In addition to a consultation recommendation, we also are quite often the ones that will actually go in and set up the equipment and do whatever sort of special configuration needs to be done or customizing needs to be done. A lot of times we also kind of come into the role of helping them figure out what sorts of alternatives or adaptations they need to do to their traditional training programs. And the, of course, the counselors are also very involved in that process as well. And then in addition to that, we provide follow-up services. It would be great, an ideal situation would be we could recommend a certain type of equipment and we would have access to that company's technology staff to provide them the training they need to be able to set it up and maintain it and make whatever future changes take place. But the reality of it is that, especially in the field of information technology, the person we meet with 1 month may not be there the next month. And also, just like we have a lot of demands on our time, being the technology staff for the commission, generally the technology staff for individual companies are also have a lot of extra demands on their time, and it's something they just really can't commit the type of resources they would need to be able to maintain all that independently. So we do offer our services as a follow-up services in most situations. I kind of strayed away from my outline here, but that kind of sums up what we do sort of in a nutshell, I guess. No, it wasn't anything real elaborate, but...
Jonathan, did you mention that all of the counselors and even some of the support staff do provide some training?
Yeah, actually I did, but let me emphasize that more. Basically, our technology staff, like I said, the staff that would be sort of the official technology services staff consists of three people, and that would be myself and the two program specialists. And my role in that is, being the program manager, I don't directly supervise the two program specialists, but I'm sort of like, I guess you would maybe call it more of like a team leader and sort of make sure that our activities are coordinated and that we're not, working at opposing ends or duplicating services. And so then in addition to that, we do have some of the support staff that have also taken the initiative and taken steps to get the training they need in order to also provide some training to individuals. And they sometimes will be the ones that will provide some of that initial training for somebody who maybe just needs some introduction into keyboarding or some basic skills with a screen reader, some of those things. The technology staff, as a technology staff, we do some of that training, but it is becoming less and less. And that's really out of necessity, because if we were to provide all of the training in addition to all of the services we need to provide for employers and assessment of job sites, there just wouldn't be enough hours in the week. So we're really grateful for the additional support that we do get from the other individuals. And in addition to the support staff that provide that training, many of the counselors are also very well equipped to teach some of the basics and some of the more advanced skills and do a significant portion of that. So,
thank you.
Address what you were asking?
Yes, thank you.
I just have one comment here. As far as technology services go, I believe that there is a perception in management that this is probably our first priority in terms of expansion of services. Of course, we just recently tried to do something about the increasing demand for services with the technology grant that was recently submitted and not accepted. Certainly, the need continues, and whatever we can, when there are opportunities to do something that's in this area, we will try. I should also mention too that that there was a grant submitted for state funds. I forget exactly what that's called, e-government or something like that.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And that also was not accepted.
And as far as expansion in the area of technology, we, I think, kind of speaking on behalf of our technology staff, our technology services as a whole, which would include not just the three technology staff, but everybody who's involved in that, given the resources that we have, I think we do an excellent job.
Yes.
We certainly could do a better job with more resources, though, and that's what we're really striving for. In just the 5 years that I've been a part of this agency, I've just seen just a mushroom of growth in the area of technology demand. It seems like pretty much certainly not every job we look at out there, but it certainly seems that way, that most every job we look at out there is requiring some computer skills. And that probably wasn't true 10 years ago. And wasn't as true 5 years ago. Mm-hmm. And it will probably be even more true 5 years from now.
3 months
so,
from now.
Or, yeah, 3 months from now.
Next week.
Probably.
Yeah.
So, you know, so it's something where, as an agency, we can't keep up with the demand with our current resources. Yeah. And we essentially have the same, well, that's not true. We have, our resources have not grown dramatically in the last 5 years, although we have done a lot to expand the degree to which the field counselors are assisting with the training, and we have actually added one position since then. So
we've officially added two.
Yeah.
Nancy Kaufman was doing the job of a program specialist for many years before we were able to upgrade that position.
Yeah.
Because it was needed to be done, and she had the expertise, so she did it. So Reese, in the last few years, we have upgraded her position and then hired the North Platte District person.
Jonathan, how do you work with the vendors? It seems like, you know, they obviously want to sell their wares as well as, you know, get out information, and that, I guess, let me have you respond to that, and I guess I have a follow-up then after.
As far as, I guess, is your question leaning towards how do we determine maybe what vendor we use to purchase products, or?
Well, obviously, you know, they're always changing also, yeah. And just, you know, for you to keep up with it, and how do the vendors,
okay.
I mean, they obviously want to make you comfortable with their product, and so I just wonder what the...
Yeah. There's a variety of ways that we sort of, I guess maybe to expand on your question, it's kind of leads into the area of how do we kind of keep up with technology and what's available and who is offering what. And that happens in a variety of ways. There are a number of occasions throughout the year to attend different vendor shows, whether those be at conferences for consumer organizations, or there are different conferences throughout the year. Up in the fall, there's always a conference in the Minneapolis area called Closing the Gap, which is geared primarily towards special education, but it's an excellent opportunity to kind of learn what's new in the area of technology. And there's always a big showing of vendors there in terms of what new products they have and things. We're fairly well known. I mean, the major vendors out there know that we exist, and they come to us frequently to inform us of new products and things. So that's one way that we're made aware of that. I don't know. Did that get to your question? Or?
Yeah. I mean, as a follow up, I mean, we obviously didn't get some of the grants that we tried to get, and I just wondered what the, because I noticed from time to time the vendors will come into Omaha or Lincoln to the center, mm-hmm. or and I've never attended one of those, so I'm not exactly sure what they put on. But is there, you know, could they come in and put on workshops, you know, a couple times in Omaha, a couple times in Lincoln a year, and have people that you know want to come in, and I suppose they couldn't get you know, from ground up training, but people that are, you know have some background. I guess I'm just wondering what might be available, you know, from the tap into the vendors.
And we do some of that, and that's generally what those are when a vendor has come into the Lincoln office or to the Omaha office. And it's kind of, when you do something like that, it's open to the public, you kind of can only do some real generalized things because you're going to have people of all different experience levels that come into that. Primarily, though, those are for the purpose of maybe just informing about new products. But we have had vendors come in and do like a one-day seminar on a particular product or particular line of products. As far as arranging that, it's kind of a combination of them calling us up and saying, hey, we'd like to stop out. And sometimes it's we call them and say, gee, we could really use some help on this. Can you send somebody out? You know, for something like that, it's really, we're sort of at their mercy, whether or not they feel it's worth their time. Because, you know, it's an expense to them to send one of their reps out for a day or two, or, you know, they've got the travel expenses involved. And if a vendor doesn't see that they're going to get a return on that, then it's not something they're going to just offer. Mm-hmm. So it's, but that is definitely one of the ways that we can sort of, I guess, better educate maybe ourselves and consumers about what products exist and what products may work well for them.
I will say that the response really varies quite a bit.
Yeah.
I know that a couple of months ago or less than that, we called a company up in Michigan regarding technology for people who are with deaf blindness, particularly equipment that would notify the consumer when the doorbell rings or the phone rings or a baby is crying and that sort of thing. And so the director of the company came down and gave an in-service for staff and consumers. And I was quite impressed by that response.
Are those kind of meetings then like videotaped so people that didn't attend later on could access what information was?
I don't think we haven't done that in the past. I would imagine that would be sort of up to the vendor whether or not they would want us to videotape it. Because, and the only reason I think there could be some hesitation there, although they probably wouldn't object, but it's almost like a sales pitch when they're coming down to meet with us. And anybody who's ever been in sales knows that, you know, it would seem like you should make the same offer to every customer. But occasionally you've got different relationships with different customers, and what you have to say or to offer to one customer may not be the same as another. And so they may not want a permanent record of what they say in those sessions. I don't know, though. I would tend to think they wouldn't object, but that might be a concern.
Well, that would be one piece. The other piece would be having a staff person that thinks of it, finds out where the equipment is, if it's in a different town, gets it, you know, organizes it. Yeah. So,
and also a lot of the times the presentations are pretty informal, and I mean it's the type of thing where you might have to sift through 8 hours of videotape to really glean anything from it. But certainly anytime when there's a more formal presentation, mm-hmm. where they're actually going through some sort of an outline or something where they're, you know, doing a step-by-step training, I think, yeah, that would definitely be something that would be appropriate to consider.
Yeah, the other consideration, I've been to, I was trying to think, at least two of those, I find them helpful as a consumer. I think that sometimes when you are working in that kind of a setting where you have several people who are working on with the same equipment and you're trying different things and all of that, you can not only get information one-on-one to some degree, but you also see what other people are doing, how they got to where they got to, and that kind of thing. Another consideration in terms of having it videotaped would be with the consumers who are there asking questions, want to be reminded somewhere down the road that they actually did ask that question. I think of a few things I've asked at some of those, and I think, how could I have been that dumb? But anyway...
so you're saying that would be not necessarily a positive thing.
Not altogether. But, you know, I wouldn't really care because I think that the way that we learn about a lot of that stuff is trial and error and getting hands-on, and I really applaud the commission for making it possible for people to get hands-on with some of those pieces of equipment for even a few hours of a day. I know that the time that goes into trying to get that together and then trying to get people to respond as to whether they're going to come or not, and that has to always be a concern too, because like you said, if there aren't enough people there, then the vendor may think, well, I wonder why I came. And if there's an overwhelming number, then they may not have provided for enough pieces of equipment to go around. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, and I've been kind of in both of those situations with those kinds of presentations. And I really think that we need to help consumers to not only respond to the idea of having that kind of thing happen, but to the reality of it, and you know, make commitments and realize that that this is not something that is just kind of not costing anybody any money or taking the time or whatever. One of the things that's been brought up to me is on a little bit different subject is the idea of how the commission can best approach equipment on job sites. You know, I know you talked about how what the general thing is, at least if I understood correctly, is to make recommendations and to influence the employer to provide equipment. That doesn't always happen, and what sometimes ends up happening is that the commission ends up having to go in and discover that the recommendations weren't necessarily heeded, or that people maybe tried to take a shortcut or something like that. And there's been some thought out there that maybe the best approach, and I don't know whether this isn't done mostly because of cost, or because, I mean, I don't really know, so I'm just throwing it out. to make it so that the equipment itself is, you know, not just recommended necessarily as much as provided and then reimbursed for, so that maybe things would, I mean, it would take less time, less effort, and maybe things would be right quicker, more places. Is that making any sense?
Yeah, we sort of do a variety of that. It kind of depends on the situation. There have been occasions where we've just simply said, this is what they need, so we'll be bringing it in tomorrow. And there are other situations where we say, this is what they need. This is, you know, this is the part you'll do, this is the part we'll do, whatever. I would say there are a couple of issues involved in that. One would be cost. If we just simply provided all the equipment, that would be difficult. And however, the approach of we'll provide the equipment, and then once we know this is a viable situation, you can reimburse us. That's an approach that we have at least thrown out as a possibility to a number of employers, and have really kind of helped to open the doors, because when you're talking about an additional $1,000 to $2,000 or $3,000 worth of equipment to hire an a person, anybody they take off the street for a new job may or may not work out, regardless of whether or not it happens to be their blind. You know, they've got the risk of turnover with anybody they hire, and so they're dealing with, not only do they have a situation that's going to need some adjustment in terms of accommodations to make sure it's even going to be viable, but they're dealing with whether or not the person's even going to stick with the job, and they're also dealing with the possibility of having to pay a lot of extra money to hire this person. So all of those things are barriers. You know, the first two are barriers for anybody off the street, but then you throw in this extra piece of equipment or extra expense, and it becomes a problem. And certainly to say, you know, let's try this out, no additional risk to you, is a benefit to the employer.
I have a question for Pearl here, because I think I have to question what you're saying, in that my understanding is, from what Bill Brown was saying to us recently, is that he really does not feel like it's appropriate for us to go into situations where we're authorizing for something, paying for something, and then receiving reimbursement later.
We cannot ask for or get reimbursement from a client. I have not discussed with Bill, but as far as I know, there would be no legal reason that we could not get reimbursement from an employer. It's the client that we can't, you know, require or ask for reimbursement.
Yeah, and I'm not sure what all the issues are involved in that, but that's something we would probably need to look at, because what sort of ends up happening is, maybe it wouldn't be an issue, but, you know, we're sort of acting as a retailer almost, but yet we're not really selling the product, so we're not collecting any taxes on it or anything.
Right.
And so, so we have to be careful that we're not actually taking that role where we're becoming a vendor, because that's certainly not our role. In the situations where we've used that as a kind of a way to get our foot in the door, there really aren't too many where it has actually come to the point where they've reimbursed us.
Right.
And there have been a variety of reasons for that. One reason would be, for a lot of individuals, the job we're helping them get might be one of their first jobs, and they might within 6 months acquire the skills to move on to somewhere else. And if we purchase that equipment's going with that individual. And that is another issue that always comes up, is do I really want my employer to own this equipment? Because maybe I want the equipment to belong to me, because I might want to move somewhere else in 3 or 6 months or a year. And now I'm going to have to fight the same battle again with my new employer.
I would like to mention one more example or scenario in which many times we don't necessarily get reimbursed from the employer, but the employer will return the equipment to us, and they will purchase their own equipment, so we can use that equipment for other clients as well.
Yeah, we have had those situations where we've provided the equipment initially, and then once they get their own equipment in place, then we take that original equipment and put it somewhere else. That's a good point.
There is a downside to the thing too, in that if we purchase the equipment, you know, at least I can think of one employer in particular where they really don't have a sense of ownership, and their tax report is not what it should be.
Yeah.
And then whenever they encounter the most minor problem, they're on the phone talking to Nancy Kaufman and expecting her to drop everything and come on over.
Yep, we've had that situation occur where they see that this computer has some adaptive technology on it, so they're completely hands-off. And 90% of the issues we get called about are things that have no relationship to the adaptive technology.
I'd like to bring up a situation this time. It came up about a year ago. They don't only, they have hand once in a while on developing equipment. About a year ago, a person's near and dear to me, working for Revenue, and she's a receptionist. They had trouble with the telephone getting different lines, so they wanted to get a machine developed, and between the commission and the Revenue and a fellow up in Canada, they developed this teletalker. And that's really been becoming a boon to secretaries around because they're multi-line systems and so forth. So in that regard, services had a hand in developing equipment. I think they deserve a lot of credit for that. It's really been a godsend.
Yeah, that was one of those situations that became rather long and drawn out, and I think everybody involved was starting to question, is this going anywhere? And once it finally came to completion, what was found was a really good result. And it can be frustrating. There's times when you kind of think you're just treading water, not getting anywhere, but then all of a sudden you find the shore.
Their real problem came from the Altel.
But there are a number of barriers in that particular situation.
Yeah.
I'm just going to get back a little bit to the providing equipment and things. That's always kind of a complex issue because, on one hand, if we purchase the equipment, exactly what I think Bob, you were the one that said, you know, then the employer doesn't feel much ownership in it. If the employer purchases the equipment, then the individual might feel a little bit trapped there. It's something where there isn't one answer that is sort of fits all situations, and we sort of have to take it on a case-by-case basis, and as far as, you know, providing equipment, it generally would be the responsibility of the employer to provide the equipment. in most cases, the items we're talking about are not, although for an individual they would seem rather expensive, for some of the businesses we deal with, they're really not significant costs. And so they certainly would be considered a reasonable accommodation, and it would be their responsibility to provide it. But some of the other factors that have been mentioned come into play, and so that's not always the case. But
I know we talked about financial participation last time for clients, but in drawing up this employment plan, I mean, is there flexibility to have a client spend some of the money for some of the adaptive equipment?
I've sent a question to the feds in Kansas City and not gotten a reply yet. I think they're all on vacation this week, but asking about whether it's allowable for us to have financial participation of a sort on just specific things. My question had to do with the academic support, but I would think it would be parallel. I don't have that answer yet. I know that it would be true. You can identify which things you're going to require financial participation, but what I don't know is whether that means if we implement it for some piece, does that mean that for all clients in the initial stages you have to do the financial participation process, which we all discussed at length, or can you have it be specific to when they are wanting academic support or when they are wanting technology support, then implement it on those people? So I don't know that yet.
It would seem like, you know, when we're talking about finite dollars, that, you know, and you have to look at rationing some, you know, it'd be fine if we had all the money in the world, we could just buy everybody everything that they needed, but with finite dollars, you know, to not take into account a person's situation at all is, seems like we're getting, you know, we're being not allowed to help as many people as we could.
Mm-hmm. Well, and kind of related to that is, just as if an employer is simply presented with this handful of equipment, they maybe don't feel as much ownership in it. I think that tends to happen sometimes with consumers as well. They kind of feel, you know, when they're just handed the equipment and said, here you are, they don't quite have some of that ownership as well. I know something that we've done in some situations is, you know, not figuring out, okay, you'll pay a percentage of this or we'll split the cost or whatever it's going to be. But usually when you're talking about getting somebody set up with some adaptive technology, you're talking about multiple pieces of equipment. Some of those pieces are expensive and some are less expensive and more, you know, more affordable for the individual. So sometimes when equipment is to be provided, we'll cover the more difficult to obtain pieces, and some of the easier to obtain components we'll let the individual take care of acquiring. Things like a printer or a scanner, you know, some of those things. So.
Well, there's been some confusion too, concerning like maintenance agreements and upgrades and things like that. You know, I mean, sometimes people are saying, okay, if the equipment belongs to the commission, then and I'm supposed to pay the upgrades or the maintenance agreements or whatever, how much sense does that make? And then there is the discussion that's gone on about after X number of years, the equipment reverts to the person, or it would follow the person no matter what or whatever. You were talking about that with the employment situation, in which case the paying for the maintenance and so forth would make more sense to an individual if they thought of it as theirs. There seems to be kind of a gray area in there somewhere, and I don't know, is there some, I mean, I know that in this material that we just got, there was a something said in there about upgrades and things. What is the real thing with that at this point?
Okay, we've recently, in the last several months, kind of worked through what our policy is and should be on that, and developed a new loan agreement, basically.
we've decided that it makes most sense that if the person is using the equipment in some productive manner, that they should, that they would become, that ownership would revert to, would go to them at the time of the, when their case was closed, whether or not it was successful closure or not. And let's see, what else about that? That in the interim, they would be responsible for maintenance and upgrades. But then if they don't, I mean, because they're having the use of it during all that time, then if either they, well, if they, you know, decide that they don't need it, or perhaps change jobs and or change situations, that whatever it was is not something that they need, then it would come back to us so that we can provide it to the next consumer.
But I agree, it does kind of create a gray area, because what about that computer where the individual has bought more memory for it, and now they're not using the computer, so it gets returned to us? Well, do we then take the memory out and give them this useless piece of memory? That, I mean, you know, or does it just assume that that investment they put into that will now revert to us? And,
yeah, I mean, the logic to me is that they are using it during that time. I mean, if it's one day or a month, no, that wouldn't be the case. But they have the equipment for sometimes a couple years, and you know, have the use of it. And if it's not of use to them, they're not going to put in additional cost to it.
Another thing, too, I just want to emphasize, too, if the case is closed successful, and they are in possession of equipment that they're really not using, you know, which sometimes happens. You know, somebody might be issued a rail and speak or something like that. They learn how to use the equipment, but when push comes to shove, they still rely on older methods of communication, and they're not using it, you know. So I think that the determining factor is whether or not the equipment issued is being used to benefit the client at the time of case closure. And if it isn't, then we have the right to take that back.
And I think getting to the question about, so who does take care of the upgrading of things? I think, did you mention that in that the agreement it now says that they're responsible for maintenance and upgrades and things?
Mm-hmm.
And I think we need to make sure we're communicating that to them so they understand what does that mean, that I'm responsible for upgrades.
Yes, that's true.
Yeah. I think that, you know, if there's a situation where we have determined that we need to purchase a screen reader for somebody, and we purchase the initial software maintenance agreement in conjunction with that, so that they're going to get the current version plus the next two versions, it makes sense to make them aware right away that, you know, after you receive those next two versions, it's probably going to still be important for you to keep your screen reader current, but it will be your responsibility at that point, and kind of make sure they're aware of that, you know, a year